All right, everybody. Hey, we are good to go here, and we'll jump on into another office hours. As I mentioned here a minute ago, Mike's actually out of town today, so he asked if I would jump on and cover for him. So you guys get the second-class citizen today.
You're right.
All right. No, but it's good. Well, I don't know how Mike typically runs these things, but I can tell you how I've run them for years. What I like to do is just kind of go down the list of people that have announced themselves and are on here with us, and just kind of tackle any issues, questions, live deals, things that move you forward, and let everybody else kind of benefit from the conversation of the crowd. So let me do this first. Does anybody have a short window of time? Does anybody have to leave quick or early and has a burning question that the rest of the crowd would let them go first? Anybody have to leave early? Okay, good. Sounds good. Well, then we'll just kind of go down in the order that that you guys said hello to. So, Tom, you were top of the list. Let's jump in with you, man. And what's going on?
Well, my buyer's agent, or seller's agent, excuse me, kind of like went AWOL. So I'm making calls myself, and that's been my big. My big fear, but I'm starting to realize that I'm not bad on the phone.
Awesome.
I figure I just need to, if I make 30 calls, I'll be totally just jamming, I think. So I made a call on one of the guys that he screened, and I don't really know why he put it in that I should call, because the guy said he had no hurry to sell. He wasn't really motivated to sell, but he was curious for any offer. So I said, what the hell? I gave him a call. He's got a house that's a 3-2. It's about 1,240 square feet. And he wants $40,000 for it. He has a tenant in place. The tenant's a Section 8 tenant that's been a really good tenant. That person has a ticket for a two-bedroom, and this is a three-bedroom, but he's getting $750 and no hassles, so he figures there's no reason to move them out. He inherited that tenant when he bought it 5 years ago, and he said he'd sell it for $40 because that's about market price, but he wouldn't go down. He says, I'm not going to give it away. Well, I looked at the numbers, and if I add $5,000 to it, it's still a 14 cap. So emailed Mike, and he said, yeah, try to market it. So that's what I've been doing the rest of today. I got the email this morning, but I didn't check my emails. I had other stuff to do until afternoon. So a little behind the eight ball. I'm not where he wanted me to be. He wanted me to call 10 different buyers. I haven't gotten any buyer responses yet. And I don't have it under contract, because I specifically said to the guy as I was talking to him, all of a sudden I realized, I said, this might actually just sell it as a turnkey rental. And I said, are you saying if I come to you with a buyer in my network and we offer you $40,000, you'll sell it? He goes, yeah. So I didn't put it under contract or anything. I figured I just got to figure out if that's a realistic thing to be selling at $45,000 in that neighborhood. So
here's the thing that I would do. I'm gonna say a couple things. I think it sounds like the math works, right? The math works probably just fine. The question is, what are other investors paying for properties in that area, and who do you have that's interested in buying cash flowing properties like that for that general price? Because here's the thing that you don't want to do, and I'm not a lawyer, but I'm gonna tell you what you don't want to do is tell a seller, hey, if I go find a buyer in my network and then I come back and put it under contract and sell it, like, that's brokering without a license, because you're not licensed.
Right.
You can't have those conversations. And what you need to do is you need to understand what buyers are paying and have relationships with buyers to say, hey, are you a legit buyer? Are you buying right now? Do you have cash? And what kind of deals are you looking for? If I brought you a deal, are you ready to go? And know, you know, 6 to 8 guys or gals that are ready to go. Then you go do deals with sellers, because now you understand what buyers are paying, and you understand that, man, if I lock this up at 40, this is a no-brainer. I can move this thing quick. So I'm saying this for the benefit of the whole group. You guys can't broker without a license. You can't go shopping for deals for buyers, and you can't tell sellers, hey, I'm going to go shop your deal and then I'll come back, right? Because that's what a broker does. We're investors. So we need to understand what a buyer is all about, what a buyer wants, and what makes a good deal. And then we need to have the confidence to go put it under contract. And what we have to do then is have the confidence to put it under contract. And if we don't have the capacity to close on it ourselves, make your offer contingent on financing. Now you've disclosed capacity, and also use the disclosure that says our intent is to assign the contract. So now you covered the two disclosures that I talk about all the time, which is intent and capacity. Do I have the intent to close? Do I have the capacity to close? And if you properly disclosed those things and are not brokering without a license, then you're good to go. So keep that in mind. So my advice to you, Tom, is, you know, hey, you got a seller over here that will sell. Go find out what buyers, investors in the area are paying. Get a good, clear picture of what, if that deal is a deal. And if it's a deal and you know, hey, I know there's a bunch of guys here buying at 45 for this kind of house, then go put it under contract and sell them the deal. That's how I would approach it.
All right. So what Mike was suggesting is get a number, which I figured out on FreedomSoft, associated with the seller's, buyer's campaign, and then start texting people saying, you know, do you buy Section 8 turnkey properties?
Correct.
Then yep. Okay. So I haven't, and I've only done that for a few people because I'm looking at Section 8, and there's not that many in that area that are for rent. And it has, you know, I'm trying to find a single family. There's some apartments, but that doesn't count. And so
sure.
I haven't really been able to. So what's the best way to figure this out at this point?
I mean, but I assume with the length of time that you've been doing this, that you have already bought your list of buyers from List Source and have had your virtual assistant skip trace all of the buyers in your target area. So regardless of going to Section 8, you should have a big buyers list of people that you can reach out to. I would do that. And the other thing I would do is I would have your VA or you go to Craigslist and go find all of the private sellers that are listing a house for rent on Craigslist right now.
Okay.
And fire them a text.
All right.
Yeah, there's dozens of buyers that you can go access and tap into right now. But you started in the right place, Section 8, and then go into the buyers list that you built. I can't remember which module step it is, maybe module step 4. And you know, build your list of buyers in your target in that target area, skip trace them. And reach out and contact all of them, and then third, go to Craigslist and in the training module, in one of the step modules, Mike goes through and probably shows you, I think if you take the high-end market split path, you're going to see a training set of modules where he goes into Craigslist and shows you how to find the landlords and grab their phone number and fire them out a text. And so that's what I would do, Tom, is you ought to be able to go get, you know, several dozen people that you could text. I mean, probably well over 100 that you could text real quick.
Well, okay. I have a few dozen, but I don't know. I have buyers, but they're not necessarily buy and hold people, and they're not necessarily in that area. So I need to dial it down a bit and figure out, you know, that area.
Don't worry about it. No. You're thinking too hard. You're making it harder than it has to be. Don't overcomplicate it. Take all of your buyers, get their cell phone numbers, and or whatever number you have via the skip trace, and go send them a text and ask them if they're buying in that area. Give them the generalities of the kind of deal that you can put together, and just fire a text to everybody. Don't worry if they're buying in the area or not. Shoot out the message.
So can I do a mass text? Yeah. Can I do a mass text?
You can.
You can.
You can go to, under marketing and FreedomSoft, go to the text broadcast. SMS broadcast.
SMS, okay.
Yep. So that's the deal right there, Tom, is you just got to get conversations going with a bunch of buyers and find out who's VIP.
Okay.
Cool.
Right.
Should we let's jump down to Larry.
Okay, so I'm at module 4. So I have vacant lead skip trace, like 250 of those. 230 of them came back with numbers, and I have 50 buyers. I don't know if you know it, but I took an engineering job in September, and what I learned last week is my brain capacity after work is not consistent enough for me to depend on me calling. So I spent the rest of that week and finish it up now, finding a acquisitions manager and a dispositions manager. And I found two high D guys with a lot of experience. These are guys that want to transition out of what they're doing. They're already transitioning out of what they're doing that they hate, and they want to work from home. And they're fine with the 100% commission. They understand that they're the first guys that I'm bringing on, and they like that because of the way that I explained it to them. So I think they'll be better on the phones than me, actually. But so what I'm doing now is I'm finishing up putting the script in the in FreedomSoft, and I'm thinking through these, you know, how I want to record their calls, but that's not really what that's not going to be a holdup. I'm not going to wait on that. I know how to do it, but I have to be careful about trying to do this whole back end thing and not get them on the phone. So hard
yep.
stop. They're on the phone on Monday. One guy, who is that? The sales guy, the acquisition guy, he wants to be on the phone on Sunday because from his experience, that's a good time to reach people. So I'm gonna get him turned on by Sunday, and I'm gonna get the buyer guy calling my buyers on starting Monday. I'm going to start training them tomorrow and this weekend. You just said something that I want to ping off of. So my plan with the seller part is pretty straightforward. We call in those people. But you just said something about texting the buyers. What I was going to do is get the disposition guy to the sales guy to call these buyers in order of, you know, the number of properties that they've purchased. So I want them to really get those people that have bought a lot of properties in the area, and speak to them verbally. in parallel with my acquisitions guy calling these sellers.
Yep.
Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, heck yeah. Put them on the phone. Put them on the phone. Call the buyers. Skip trace them. Have them call. Have them reach out. Shoot a text if he doesn't get a hold of somebody.
Okay, I like
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
All right. Because I wasn't even thinking to direct him to the text message. So what I do with when I'm making the calls with my buyers, I ask them after I'm talking to them. I normally get them to go through Craigslist and sign up on my website. When I send out an email, I ask them if they want to receive text messages, and then I have a separate group. I add them to a group of text message people, and I blast those people. But it's been such a strong seller's market now that I already know who's going to buy my property. In my normal market, I have a guy that buys my stuff without me. I don't even have to market my stuff anymore. But
yep.
And I'm hoping that my sales guy gets that kind of relationship with somebody in El Paso. And then once we get that dialed in, then we'll jump into some other places. So that's where I am. Any advice about? Now that I have you on the phone, I was just going to tell you that because I was going to just figure out everything else. But so my plan is, I have a number that I was using to talk to the sellers. I want to get my, because I'm using another person to call the buyers, I want to get another number in FreedomSoft for his buyer call so I can track those. At some point, I want to be able to record those calls, and I'll pull in RingCentral if I have to. But I'm trying to think through the logistics. So this is my thing. This is my thing. So the way that I'm thinking is I'm going to get them to actually be on their computers and make outgoing calls from FreedomSoft using their number. And then the incoming calls will be forwarded to their personal number through the FreedomSoft number. My only concern about that is if they're not around their phone, then it's not going to be as easy for them to call the sellers. I'm not as concerned about the buyers, but I'm concerned about the logistics with the sellers.
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Our guys work the phones all day, every day. From their laptop or from their computer. And actually, we're going to have call recording toggled on inside FreedomSoft in the next week to 10 days, probably.
Oh, good.
So you'll be able to record all your calls inside FreedomSoft, which would be pretty cool.
Would that be like, is the thought to have that on all the time or like, I want to be able to turn it on and they can't turn it off.
I want to be able to record
100% of the calls and they don't have control over turning on and off.
Yes. Yep. That's exactly how it'll be. As an account manager, you'll be able to turn it on for whatever numbers you want it turned on for.
Okay.
Yep. So
that's where I am.
Yeah. Love it. Cool, man. Well done getting two guys rolling for you. That's going to be, I'll tell you, that's going to be a magical thing. You get those guys rolling and give them the tools and guide them and let them do their thing, train them a little bit, make sure that they're dialed in on how to have the conversations, and you'll be off to the races.
Yeah, and that's my primary reason for this coaching. Like, I wanted some help because I was doing fine by myself. I did need help, picking the right markets and all of that stuff. But even then, my goals are much bigger than I don't want to be a bottleneck, and I was becoming a bottleneck. So
yep.
So this is helping me, bring these guys on the right way. So that's the major part of why I'm doing this.
Beautiful, love it, Larry. Fantastic. Well, let's jump on down to Ryan.
Hey, what's up, Rob?
Where I'm at right now, I'm similar to Larry. I'm working through module 4 mainly right now. I got set up in the market. I got a bird dog, going out and sending in me some leads. I do work also a full time job, and it, like he said, by the time I get off of work, I'm pretty like bogged down and everything like that. So I put an ad out for a local guy here, actually where I am, to be a salesperson for me. So I've got a few replies from that. So I'm actually working through those now. I replied back to a few of the guys, and I'm having them take the DISC test. Just to kind of see where they're at. And then once I get all those back, I'll round those up. And I'll probably start interviewing those guys this weekend to start jumping on the phones. So other than that, I mean, what do you recommend? I got one bird dog going now. Do you recommend that I get another and have them hit another zip code where I'm at? Or how do you usually do that?
Yeah, okay. I would. I mean, again, what the first thing we want you to hit is 250 bird dog generated from the field vacant house leads. So whatever that takes to get you there as fast as possible, yeah, I would for sure.
Okay, and would you suggest putting them in a totally different zip code?
I would.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's kind of where I was leaning towards. Okay, so I've probably got 50 text messages and 50 more emails from Bird Dog. So I'm kind of, talking to them and kind of see who has the right mindset to do it. So I'll work through that and get someone set up by tomorrow. That's my goal, to have someone set up and out so they can get out this weekend. Other than that, I do have a couple deals brewing here in my own backyard that I'm in. I have one deal that I'm putting in the contract. I'm meeting the seller and putting on the contract Saturday that I think would be a great deal for one of my buy and hold investors. And then I have another one that I just sent out the contract actually today that I'm hoping to get back either tonight or tomorrow. So I'm going to send it out to the buyers I have here in my network and see, if they'll be looking to bite on it. The one particular thing about this one deal is that they want to close by the 29th, so that's a couple of weeks away. So I have a couple buyers that I have in mind for it that may want to bite on it. But if I don't get those guys to bite on it, I'm going to have to really hit the ground running and, try to find a buyer for the properties.
Yeah.
I have a skip tracer actually working on going through some of the absentee owners and skip tracing those numbers, and so I can give those guys a call here in my area. So that's kind of what I'm be working on, kind of trying to focus on, getting rid of these couple of properties and also getting set up, for the remote market that I just opened up in. So it's kind of a lot going on right now, but I'm gonna just keep it moving and keep putting one foot in front of another. So.
Yeah, well, that's good, Ryan. I mean, the deal there is, just kind of step back and look at the big picture and say, okay, I got two simple things going on here. I'm talking to sellers and I'm making intelligent offers, and I'm building the relationships and finding and talking to buyers. And you can simplify the business down to those two things and say, hey, my whole job as a wholesaler is to simply understand how an investor thinks, so that when I'm talking with a seller and I'm structuring a deal, I'm thinking in the back of my head, how would I do this deal if I was an investor, right? And so that you're structuring deals that, man, when you present them to another investor or you present them to a private lender and take them down yourself, that you're like, yeah, this is a no-brainer because we structured the deal right and it makes sense. So that's great, man. Love it.
Absolutely. And one other thing, I mean, when I'm interviewing these salespeople, I mean, is it anything in particular that I kind of need to be hitting on to kind of see if they're the right guy or the right girl?
Yeah, I mean, here's what how many of you guys want to hear the favorite question that I ask if I'm interviewing a salesperson?
I definitely want to hear it.
All right, here's what I do. This is the best. This is the absolute best. And the first time you do it, you might be uncomfortable doing it. Second time, it gets easier. By the fifth time, you're like, man, I can't wait to drop this question. So here's what you do. You get into the conversation. You tell them a little bit about the position. You hear about. Their process and sort of philosophy around selling, and get a really good sense of who they are and what they're all about. And okay. Then here's the question that you drop at them. Out of blue, you just kind of sit back in your chair and you look at them and you say, hey, Johnny, I got to be honest with you, man. You know, I'm looking for an absolute rock star to bring on the team here. And our conversation, man, I'm not hearing rock star out of our conversation. What am I missing?
Okay.
And when you say that, hey, I'm just not hearing rock star, and you stop, that one of two things is going to happen. Either they're going to say, oh Ryan, well, I don't know, man. I think I'm a rock star. I think I can sell. But if you're not hearing it, I don't know. Maybe it's not the right thing. Okay, that guy is not the right guy. The other response you're going to get is they're going to say, Ryan, I don't know what conversation you've been a part of over the last 10 minutes, but I am the guy, and I am the guy that can close the deal. So I'm not sure what you're hearing, but, you know, that's the guy you want. When they push back and fight for the position and say, wait a minute, no, you're not going to call me a bad salesman, that's the guy.
Okay. That's great.
So you want a driven person that's motivated by money, that operates their life and their business dealings with integrity.
Okay.
I had a guy that came in and interviewed for a position here a month and a half ago, and over the phone he was pretty good. I had a few reservations, but over the phone, you know, he was pretty decent. He screamed through my executive assistant to get to me. I ended up having a short conversation with him. I had some reservations, but I said, why don't you come into the office? We'll sit down and we'll chat. He no more than came into my office. Within the first 2.5 minutes, I knew I wouldn't hire this guy if my life depended on it, because he just had no integrity in how he talked about the process of selling. To him, it was a complete game, and almost to the point that he wanted to use tricky tactics in order to get people to do things. And I'm like, this guy is heck no. So look for integrity, high D driven, motivated by money, but operates with integrity. If you can do those things, you're going to find people that'll work.
Now, do you suggest getting someone with a ton of experience in it? Because I was talking with a guy last night, and he sounds like he's a really good salesman. He says he's worked for a couple of different companies and been a top producer and all that good stuff. And a couple million in sales and one position and everything like that. Do you usually lean towards those type of guys, or do you kind of try to get someone that's kind of in the middle?
I love guys that are rock stars. If they want to come on board with your team and they're a top sales guy, I love it. I have no problem with that at all, because you want a sales guy that knows his job, and all you have to do is tweak him in real estate knowledge a little bit. Here's a key thing that they have to be able to do basic math, right?
Yes.
If you say, okay, John, I'm going to do some basic math. Let's assume that a landlord collects $10,000 in rent for the year, and they paid $100,000 for the house. What's their return on investment? They got to be able to do basic math.
Right. Yep.
So, because we've had guys that can be decent salesmen, but they just can't do math. And like, they just don't understand math. And whether you're negotiating with a seller and trying to do math to figure out your price, or you're talking with a buyer and doing math to convince them, you know, to show them why this is a good investment, you got to be able to do math. And so being able to do math is a big deal.
Okay. Yeah, that's definitely very important.
Okay, great. And one last question. Do you guys have any way of, like, when I am sending the bird dog out and I give them a specific zip code, what's the best way to track and make sure that they're hitting our spots? I mean, do you guys just kind of print out a map and kind of keep tracking it that way, or is it you guys have any tools that you use that, you know, helps you keep track of that and make sure you're getting the most out of it?
Yeah. What we usually do is we do a map. Let me pull up. I'm forgetting the name of it off the top of my head. Let me go find the mapping thing that – there's a few of them. So we use Batch Geo. The problem with Batch Geo is it's a subscription process.
Okay.
We also have used Zmaps, and we have used Easy Map Maker. There is a specific zip code map maker that I want to find here for you. Let's see. Here we go. UnitedStatesZipCodes.org.
Okay.
What that is helpful for is for you to go in and search by zip code anywhere in the country, and then zoom in on your area, and you'll be able to see the specific layout of all of the zip codes. And then what we do is we use, like, Easy Map Maker, or we just print out this zip code map from UnitedStatesZipCodes.org, and then we'll edit that, and we'll highlight, okay, we want you to, you know, these three zip codes are in zone one. And, hey, Bird Dog, we want you to go hit zone one.
Okay.
So that's what we'll usually do. We'll turn our zip code map into zones, and we'll send certain bird dogs into zones so that it's not just by zip code. We'll map it out a little bigger than that.
Okay. So you're putting it together, and you're giving them a copy and saying, okay, this is what you kind of follow.
That's exactly right.
Okay. Okay.
Yep.
All right. That works.
Cool.
All right, thanks,
awesome.
Rob.
Yeah, you got it, Ryan. Great. Janie.
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay, there. You're still there. Great.
I'm here. I had to unmute me.
Yeah, no worries.
We got our Craigslist ad in for our market area.
Good.
What category did anybody else put theirs under? The Craigslist ad for a bird dog.
Craigslist ad for bird dog, usually put it under job ads.
Okay, but what category?
Real estate.
Yeah, right. Real estate. Yeah, I don't remember the job the categories off the top of my head.
Yeah, there really wasn't like a real appropriate one, I guess. I mean, kind of real estate, but I don't know.
Larry, I use real estate. Yeah,
today.
I just use real estate too. I got a lot of calls from that one. So.
Yeah, and even after I accepted the people that I was gonna use, I kept it up a couple more days so I could have backup people.
Okay. All right. Well, got that done.
Yeah,
we got our list from ListSource. We got it mapped, and so the next thing we have to do is get our VA. We already have a salesman hired, so it's just getting everything ready for him to start making calls.
Awesome.
Getting there.
Perfect. Well, you guys are moving right along then.
Yeah, we're trying.
What's the timing? When will you have somebody on the phone making seller calls?
Oh, Bird Dog. As soon as we hire Bird Dog and he gets out Bird Dogging, we'll be all right.
Yeah. Yep.
It's all waiting on that. I put it under sales. So what you said, I may have to change that to real estate. But in the Tampa area, though, it's a paid ad. It's not a free ad. So I may have
yep.
to step up and put another $35 and put it in a different section also until we get the first Bird Dog out there.
Yeah, I'm looking at the categories right now, and real estate is where I think we've posted it a lot of the time. You can even click on the part-time ad and post it in the part-time work, right? That's not a bad place to do it. I'm looking to see if there's any other ones. What's that?
I listed it under contract work and under sales, but I understand what part-time might tweak some people out there.
Yeah, I would just I don't think under sales sales doesn't make sense, though. You're not looking for a salesperson. You're looking for somebody to drive around and take pictures, right, for your Bird Dog?
Right.
So yeah, I would either do real estate or part-time.
Okay. Or laborers and gigs. I
swap categories and kind of mix it up.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, depending on what kind of response you get, you could even – I don't know if this conforms to Craigslist's requirements or not. You could either even post stuff under gigs, under a paid – you know, a paid gig. So.
Okay, I will see how it goes, and I'll mix it up, even if we've got to put a couple of different ads in different sections.
Perfect.
And, see if I can, it's not any real money, and it's costing us time.
Yep, perfect. Awesome.
Okay.
Well, good, guys. That sounds good. Janie, you guys anything else, or jump over to Mike?
I think that's all we got for today.
Yeah.
Okay.
We're good.
No worries. Great. Mike, let's jump on down to you.
All right, so you can hear me okay?
You're a little quiet, but I can hear you. You're good.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm real close to where Janie and them are at. I did hire Bird Dog, supposed to start tomorrow, working some zip codes, so we'll see how that goes. I'm going to keep trying to get at least a couple more going so I can put them to work and see which ones actually can produce the results.
Yep.
Keep it going, but yeah, I've got that rolling. Got on FreedomSoft, started messing around setting up websites, and kind of took the thing I'm going to use for the this Bird Dog my campaign. Took the email and emailed up, kind of made a mock email, sent some pictures, and just trying to figure out what they're going to see on their site so I could explain it to them.
Perfect.
I did an email or website also, just kind of playing with it and kind of targeting towards the Bird Dogs as well. Just threw up a website they could go to just send me information if they need to find out what I'm doing and have to get a hold of me. just to try
Perfect.
To play with it. So
awesome.
That, we got our foot on the floorboard and just trying to get this going as quick as I can.
Cool. Love it. Well, that's good progress in a short period of time. Love it.
Yeah, for sure. So, Mike's been responsive to some of the questions and stuff I've had, and things have been going real well. These phone meetings definitely bring out a lot of things that you wouldn't think of asking until you run into it. So it definitely gives you some heads up on a lot of things that I'm going to you know, I'm real new to this industry. Kind of started messing around about 6 months ago with my brother Matt, doing
cool.
some mountain properties here in Colorado, and this is full on now. This is what I'm doing full time, so I'm looking forward to it.
I love it. Well, you know the story, and so do I, and I'll say it for the rest of the crew. Mike's brother Matt coached with me back in 2008. He was working for a family business. He quit his job, jumped out of the airplane, didn't even know if the parachute that he had on his back worked. The day after he quit the family business, signed up with my coaching program, and has been a full-time real estate investor ever since. So that's pretty cool, Mike. I'm glad you jumped out of that same plane, and you've had almost 10 years of watching your brother do it.
Yeah, I had jumped off the bridge a little before him, leaving the family business. I opened up a hot rod shop and ventured into that for almost 10 years and realized I was just working myself to death. So, yeah, this is something that looks like use my brain, not my hands.
That's right.
Yeah, definitely,
that's right.
Definitely. So
very cool.
Real cool. So, yeah. So I'm good right now on questions. I've been just sitting back, absorbing as much as I can.
Fantastic. All right. Well, let's jump on down to DeWitt.
Hey, Rob. Can you hear me?
I got you.
So I'm going to just walk through, like, what I've done so far and then just tell you about my issues to that. They're not really issues, just questions. So I started, you know, like, I guess about 10 days ago or something. So I know I need more time to give it more time. But so I went through all the modules. I mapped out all the high investor activity in my city that I picked.
Okay.
And then I also mapped out the vacant areas just to see where they kind of coincided. But I've got like 8 bird dogs now that I set up. Sunday night I sent the ad, and I got a ton of responses on Sunday. And I, like, literally, like these guys said, like 25 responses or something. So I actually engaged 7 of them with different zip codes, 3 zip codes each, told them what the deal was, everything else. The problem is only one got to work, and he found around 17 or 18 deals, not deals, but vacant properties, took pictures, sent me the address, you know, went straight to the Freedom Soft account, which is great. The other guys didn't even get started, and so then I set up a new one today to see if they would work out, and they're supposedly getting started, so we'll see. And so that's number one. And then number two, I'm kind of in a tweener market, so it's kind of a high price plus plus low price. So I'm trying to do both. And so right now I'm trying the low price strategy. And so I guess I want to ask also first about bird dogs, if there's a way to essentially get them going without screaming at them, because they're killing me right now. And I've emailed them back, and a couple have said, oh, there's just no vacancy over there, I'm wasting my money. And all the only zip codes I've given them are basically houses' average sale price is like around 110 and less. So I'm trying to stay in the lower price markets where there's investor activity also.
Okay.
So that's one question. And number two is there a point, what point in time should I start on the high price market strategy, if that makes sense?
Yeah, what market are you in?
It's San Antonio.
San Antonio. There's plenty of vacant property in San Antonio.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, when I download it, there's thousands.
Yeah. There's plenty of vacant properties in San Antonio. They got to just target, you know, dial them in, target them in on the right areas, which it sounds like you are. You might even be able to go a little bit lower than that 110 ceiling, you know, drop them down into the 75 and down. In San Antonio, you're right, it is an in-between market. But there is more than enough distressed, vacant, abandoned, boarded up inventory all across San Antonio. It's definitely flipped over the last 18 months to 2 years, like what there was 2 years ago compared to what there is today, it's some of that inventory has been absorbed, but there's still plenty of it. we've actively been, we've done a lot of deals in San Antonio, and so I know that market real well.
Okay.
So number one, how do you get them to do it? You don't. 25 to 1 is a little bit lower than you should be experiencing, but the reality is I usually tell people, you know, 10 bird dogs will tell you that they're going to go do it. Two will actually do it. And so
okay.
out of 25, I would expect 4 or 5 of them to have gone to work. And so some of what you might do is just verify and revisit whether you're targeting the right areas. You got to be on the low end of the low end in San Antonio to hit the neighborhoods where you're going to see the vacant houses.
Okay.
Now you can go to the east side, you know, east of downtown,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to find a whole bunch over there. And then there's other pockets all around town that you can go find. So, but the key is you gotta hit the right neighborhoods, and you gotta be the lowest end targets of those areas in order to really hit them. San Antonio is one of those markets where I would be applying a high priced market strategy in addition to what you're doing with the vacant house side, because you're going to get a lot of really good high investor activity neighborhoods that just don't have a bunch of boarded up houses, but they do have a lot of properties, or they may not look boarded up, but there's plenty of properties available and out of state owners and lifestyle or property distress, there's plenty of deals.
Okay, cool. So you just go ahead and start it now, just in combination with the low price market, like at the same time, basically.
I would revisit and just make sure that you're sending the bird dogs into the lowest of the low price neighborhoods in San Antonio. That's where they'll find the vacants. And then simultaneously, I'd be launching our high-price marketing strategy in a market like San Antonio.
Okay. And one question about lowest of the low. There were maybe 2 or 3 that were lower than the lowest ones that I selected, and they had low investor activity, but they had investor activity just not very high. Should I go ahead and, I'm just going to go ahead and do them regardless now.
Yeah, I mean, here, I'm logging into my FreedomSoft account, our active account that we were actually, operating in San Antonio, and I'm just gonna tell you, I think we have, if I do bird dog campaigns, I look here at San Antonio. Man, San Antonio, I've got probably 3,000 vacant houses in my campaigns here. So
okay.
my point is there's plenty of them out there. You just got to get the guys to go do the work.
Okay. One last question. Would you ever increase what you pay? I think a lot of pushback has been $3 per property. Not necessarily. I've only given it a week, but I have kind of felt that from a couple of the guys, like $3 is not enough. And I know it's common sense just to do what I need to do, but any suggestions from you on that?
Yeah. I mean, here's what I'll tell you. I know that our guys have, on occasion, paid more, but as a rule of thumb, like I can tell you right now, in every market that we're actively operating in, our price is $3. I know that our guys have made outlier decisions and they've paid more at times for different things, but rule of thumb across the board, we pay $3.
Cool. Okay.
And think about that. I mean, think about that. That as long as somebody gets, as long as you're sending somebody into a decent neighborhood, that's got the vacants, that's got the stuff there. I mean, that's easy money for somebody.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. $1,000, yeah, you think you can get $1,000, in a week, and that's a good paycheck. But
that's right. Yeah, it's a really good paycheck.
Cool.
Yep. All right. Good.
Thanks,
good deal. Yeah, Dwight, was anything else or?
No, that's it for now.
All right, sounds good. Well, let's jump down to Lee. Lee, are you still there? We might have lost. Oh, there he is. Jump on in, Lee. How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Great.
Me personally, I ain't as far as all the rest of the guys. Kind of busy week. Doing a lot in my market, but I'm in the Dallas, Texas market, so eventually I don't want to do any more investing in my backyard. It's too competitive. So my thing is I want to go on other markets. I have my markets picked out. I came across one market where it was at the top of the sweet spot, so I didn't know if I wanted to actually go in that market or not because it was right at like 14.9. So it was like on that borderline at the top of the sweet spot, but just right there where the so I didn't know if I wanted – I didn't know if that would be a good market to go in.
Yeah, it would, Lee, and I'll tell you why. I generally like to hedge on the more higher supply side than I do the competitive side. And so being at the top of the sweet spot like that is perfectly okay with me.
Okay, cool. So I pretty much got my markets picked out. I think tonight, well, actually, my next few weeks, I'm pretty much free because my kids will be out for Christmas break and things like that. So I'm pretty familiar with the whole process. The guys that went before me had some pretty good questions. You answered them for me. So it's just all about me hitting it later on tonight. But, hey, I'm good.
Good. All right, Lee. Well, that's fantastic. Well, I know a couple of people have joined and left as we've been on here just chatting. Who's joined us that hadn't thrown their name into the hat yet and looking for an opportunity to jump in and ask a question?
Yeah, hey, Marcus. Mike is Clark.
Hey, how's it going?
Someone else got there too. This is Clark.
Yeah, Clark.
I finally got some bird dogs on the move, and I'm getting a lot of leads. I'm still a little fuzzy about where to send them. What they're sending me are pictures of a lot of boarded up houses, but I'm a little I need to understand better how these neighborhoods are attracted to investors, because I can't find a correlation between investor areas and where the bird dogs are going. I bought a list source for out of the area owners, and it's not the areas they're going in. It's an MSA that doesn't include the zip codes where they're going, where I'm finding a lot of vacant properties. So, again, how do I know if the areas they're going in are going to be attracted to investors?
Well, so the first thing you want to do is you want to figure out the number one thing is you want to figure out where investors are buying, and then you want to tell your bird dogs to go there, right?
Okay.
Now,
well,
if you've got bird dogs that are out in the field generating leads for you, what you want to do then is go into those areas and find out, are investors buying? And who are the investors buying in those areas? Because
how do I do that?
What market are you in?
Cincinnati.
So you're going to go in, and if you go into the modules, I think it's in module 4 is the buyer module. And
right.
one of the early modules has you picking your areas, right? It has you figuring out the areas that you're going to target for your bird dogs, module 1 or 2. There's a marketing buy a list strategy that you map your list and figure out where the investors are buying. That's how you determine where to send your bird dogs. Then in module 4, we take that same list and we go through the process to say, okay, now let's go back and let's skip trace all of these buyers. Let's get on the phone with them, particularly in the areas where our sales guys or our bird dogs are generating the leads. Let's go to that list, find the investors that are buying in those zip codes. Let's skip trace all of them. Let's call them and jump on the phone. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So you're buying one list of investors in module 1 or 2, and that helps you map and pick where to send your bird dogs because you want to send them where the investor activity is. And then in module 4, you're going to take that same list and you're going to find the investors that are buying in those targeted areas where you're sending your bird dogs, pull out all the investors that have bought, that are buying in those, you know, zip code groups or those areas, and skip trace them and jump on the phone.
Okay, I got to go back and reread it. I mean, like I said, I'm having trouble with my computer accessing the modules, but I just have to find a way to do it. Okay, let me check it. Let me see what I can do. I'll have some questions for you if I can't do it.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I mean, okay. If you can go through the modules, it's all laid out pretty step by step. But that's the basic description of the concept behind it. Is number one, figure out where the investors are buying, and you do that by buying and mapping the list source list. And then step 2, once you've identified those top targeted zip code and areas, go find all the investors that are on that list that are buying in those areas and skip trace them, pick up the phone and call them.
Okay, well, what I've done is, I did a list source thing for the MSA, and it outlined counties where all the investors are buying, nothing really close to the city. And my bird dog, I don't know if they're going to be kind of reluctant to go that far to, you know, skip trace or to find leads. If they've got to drive a long way for $3 a lead, it's I'm not sure. So I have to ask them if they're willing to go to these zip codes. I mean, I'll do that. I can do that.
Yeah, here's what I would do. I would just work. I mean, post an ad for a bird dog and post in the ad the zip code that, you know, the zip code or zip codes that you want them to go work. And, you know, must be within 10-minute driving distance to the following zip codes, right? Your ad. Now you're going to get a bird dog to reply that's already lives or, you know, is close to that area.
Okay, that's getting clearer.
Yep, cool.
Good, thank you.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. And, hey, I'm going to just jump back a quick – can't remember if it was DeWitt or Lee that was talking about San Antonio. But I just pulled up our a list here. Now, this includes some condo townhome units, but over 5,300 vacant properties in the San Antonio greater area. So you shouldn't have a problem finding vacant houses.
Well, that's what I figured. That, I appreciate that because I saw a bunch on the back, the vacant list I looked at, and so these guys are just. I just need to get the right guys on there, and I need to direct them out of those lower price areas. So, thanks for looking at that.
Yeah, you got it. No worries. That's what I was thinking. And you know the east side of San Antonio, what they call the east side, that's the lowest priced area, and it's a special buyer over there. You got to find east side buyers. If you end up in the east side, the rest of the city, other than what's called the east side, most investors will buy just about everywhere. East side it's got its own little specialness. Everywhere else is pretty fair game for everybody.
Awesome.
Just a little insider info on San Antonio because I know that market pretty darn well.
That's awesome. Thank you.
You got it. Okay. Well, great, Clark. That wrapped you up. Who else has jumped on here with us?
Dennis.
Hey, Dennis.
How's it going? Calling from Okinawa.
Fantastic.
All right. I'm working, I guess I'm on module 4. I'm working through that and getting through these buyers. I see how important that is, talking to these buyers. So I got that as, my next item up for action, getting through these 10 buyers. And, in my new market, which is Louisville, Kentucky. My old market was Durham, North Carolina, and I have two deals that I'm working through right now in that market because I already have people in line, and I put some bird dogs out in that area. I'm doing bird dog, and I'm doing a hybrid in that area. But Louisville is my new market that I'm working and I'm excited about. I got my bird dog out there. I got my leads coming in today. I'm skip tracing them. I should be calling by this weekend in that area, sellers. And so I need to get these buyers out within the next day.
Perfect.
The SMS broadcast is something that's new, I didn't think about that, so I have a list now of 65 buyers with phone numbers that I got from another site, and I'm going to text blast them and just see who I can get on the phone from that text blast, see who will respond, and I can call them. That'll help me get the fast action guys.
That's right.
Off the top. So I'm going to do that tonight, and... yeah, get on the phone and deal with these buyers. The question I had is a lot of people are going with the sales guys. Do you have a module on that, or do you have any way to get that? I love to put somebody like that in place. Should I have a certain amount of leads coming on before I do that, or when should that be an action item?
Yeah, so that's a great question. You know, when do you know it's right to bring out a sales guy? And the best advice that I can give you is if you find that you don't have the time to make the phone calls, then the time is right to bring out a sales guy. In order to do that, you've got to be mentally in that place to be really clear on how am I going to generate leads, okay? Because if you get a good sales guy can call through a skip trace set of leads about 400 in a week. If he's got his head down and he's working, you know, an 8-hour day, about 400 in a week. So if you've got a guy who's working part-time, he might be able to work through 200 leads in a week. Now that Or let me back that up. Not leads, 200 records, skip traced records, outbound phone calls, right? Not inbound leads, but outbound phone calls. So if he's working part-time, he or she can probably do about 200, give or take, a week. And so what you want to do, and guys, understand this is why, you know, step one is go get your 250 vacants, because we know that if you are working the business full time and you're just, you know, getting started, that's going to take you, you know, a week to get all through those leads. That doesn't mean you're going to connect with everybody. It means you're going to get through those leads and you're going to connect with some people and you're going to have some follow-up and you're going to have some that you're going to put on a phone call 2 weeks out, and those 200 to 400 leads in the first week are going to get you rolling. And so once you decide to bring on a sales guy, what you want to have is a system for your bird dogs and your skip trace that can go generate about 200 leads a week at a minimum. Now, let me tell you guys this. We launched one of our markets in May, and we brought a new sales guy on board. We trained him, and we generated about 3,600, no, maybe about 4,000 to 4,400 leads in that market in about a month period of time. So think about it. We spent quite a bit of money. We spent about 12 grand generating all of those leads. But here's the thing, guys. Understand this. We have still not, in 6 months now operating in that market, we have still not worked all of those leads, and we're getting deals every single week. Okay? So we generated all those leads up front, stuck them into the campaign for that market, and we drip those leads out onto his dashboard every week. So he's just working new leads, boom, 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 which is exactly why when you guys get to the place where you're running this as a true business and not a solopreneur, you know, make money thing, but as a true business, if you do it right, you can operate this business at about a 65 to 70% net margin. Your overhead as you're running a business is going to be about 20%. Your sales commissions are going to be probably on a sliding scale of between 6.5% and 17.5%. And your marketing costs are going to be between 5% and 8%. Now, our marketing costs are below 5% in every market that we're in. But 5% to 8% is what I see a lot of guys running that kind of run our system. It's what our whole franchise is built around. And so I don't know if that's answering your question, Dennis, exactly, but if you find that you don't have the time to make the phone calls, it's time to bring on a sales guy, and then your job is to make sure that you're focused on making sure that your sales guy has enough leads. Make sure that he's got at least a month's worth of leads. So for a new sales guy, that's probably 750 to 1,000 leads or records that he can call. That's gonna keep him busy for a full month. And in that month, if he's any good, he out of those records, vacant houses with out-of-state owners, with in-state owners, with, you know, vacant houses, he's going to knock down 4, 5, 6 deals.
Okay.
Our guy, when we brought our guy on board 6 months ago, brand new, fresh market, launched our leads, had 4,000 leads. We put 400 on his dashboard, and we said, go to work. And he put his head down, and he worked for the first week 8 hours a day. All he did was call sellers. In the first 10 days of doing that, he got 8 deals.
Awesome.
Eight deals that we flipped and made money with. mm-hmm. not that we canceled contracts on and didn't close, 8 deals that we made money on in the first 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell you that because if you follow the process and get somebody that'll just put the head down and do it, the money's there.
Okay. That definitely answered my question. I need to come up with it. I need to have at least a month's worth in queue before I start thinking about it personally. Because I have the time to make the call over here. So.
Okay, great. Perfect.
Hey, Rob, I have a question about that commission. I'm sorry, I didn't know if you were done yet. I'll wait.
Yeah, I'm done.
You just mentioned that your commission structure and Mike told us that your structure is different than that you're a little different. So I'm doing like 10% for $17,000 or less in revenue, and then 20% above that during any given week. But I also told these guys that I'm just doing that with them, and anybody I bring on after them is probably going to be different. But yep. What are your thoughts on I'm comfortable with it being that high for these guys because I'm also trying to give them some incentive to take the risk with me because I haven't proven the revenue yet.
Yep.
But I want to try to keep 60% profit margin after everything's said and done. So what are your thoughts on all of that?
Yeah, I think what you offered those guys is a good deal for those guys, and if they can help you kickstart everything, I think that's good. I think that you're going to find that it's too high. I think that you're going to find that between your marketing and your overhead as it grows and the things that you're doing, you're paying too much. what we do. And, you know, we've done a lot of different models, and what Mike has told you guys is what we have done over the years. And he generally, we try to keep it simple for people. Like, if we got too complicated on how we do our compensation structure, it would bottleneck a lot of people, and they wouldn't move forward because they wouldn't understand it. And so what Mike does is he just simplifies it to a straight percentage. Here's how we actually do it. On a wholesale deal, we pay our acquisitions guys 15%, and we pay our sales guys, disposition guys, 10%. But we pay on what we call a commission base, and so we take the first $7,500 out of a wholesale deal, and we don't pay commission on that first $7,500. If we actually use our own funding and close on it, then we take the first $15,000 off the table, and we pay those commissions on the commission base. It's the net of the $7,500 or the net of the $15,000. Now, some of you just heard that, and it went right over your head. Don't worry about it. Others of you heard it and said, okay, I understand that. The reason we're doing it that way is we pay 10% to our 10% to our sales guys and 15% to our acquisitions guys on the commission base, and we protect the first $7,500 or the first $15,000 to the house on deals. That covers our overhead. That covers our investment in marketing. That covers profit. That covers owner compensation. That's why we protect that first bit of money, and we pay the net of that first money is what we call the commissionable base, and that's what we pay the percentage on. Does that make sense, Larry?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because you're describing a scenario I didn't think about because if for whatever reason, which I don't anticipate, I'm getting low commissions, even though I would still be paying them a low amount. I hear you. I like the idea of having a minimum profit to the house, but because I don't have experience with how this is going to, the revenue is going to go, I don't know how that translates to what they get paid. But I hear the concept.
Yeah, and so and so that's why, and that's why Mike teaches inside our program just a straight flat percentage, because you as a business owner, as you mature in your understanding of the numbers and start doing more and more deals, and that team matures and grows with you, at some point you as a business owner are going to look at it and say, wait a minute, we need to protect the house. Initially, it would be, it's more complication than it's worth. I'm telling you what we do because you guys asked, and I'll tell you the complicated things that we do in our business that when you're getting started and scaling up are not necessary, but at some point you'll probably come to the same conclusions that we have that have to be done.
Yeah, this helps me too because you know, we haven't signed the any agreements yet, so I can verbally already prepare them to know that this is how we're starting out, but it's not going to continue to be that way once I make sure they're paid, you know, for taking the risk.
Yeah, and understand too, our guys are all on salary, right? They all have a base salary plus benefits. So
that's a
little different scenario too, right? So we pay them a base salary plus benefits, where we pay 100% of our employees' insurance premiums every month for their entire family. So that's a pretty big benefit. That's why we have to protect the house.
Gotcha.
So, cool. Anybody else? Anybody else join us that we haven't chatted with yet?
Rob, this is Larry.
Yeah.
Janie's other half.
Hey, Larry.
Well, I was listening to your commission structure, and you're saying you're protecting the first $7,500 or $15,000. Are we talking of profit, of gross? That kind of throws me off. I don't quite grasp how that scale's going.
Yeah, so on a wholesale deal, we protect the first $7,500. So let's say, for example, to make this easy math, let's say that we did a wholesale assignment of contract of $10,500 net. So we made $10,500 on the wholesale assignment. Well,
okay.
We protect the first $7,500, so we take the $10,500 minus $7,500, and their commission base is $3,000. So our sales guy is going to make 15% of $3,000, so $450. And our acquisitions guy is going to make $450. Sales guy is going to make $100.
Okay, I understand that. I guess the numbers are looking small to motivate a salesperson, and I, you know, on volume that's probably get lost in a, you know, 10-deal month or 12-deal month. But on the salesperson, I'm thinking if he can't make $1,500. Each one's $1,500 or $1,200 on the deal.
I just gave you an example for easy math. We're not encouraging our guys to go do little deals. Like we don't do a whole lot of $10,000 deals. Our average deals are in the $20,000 to $25,000 range.
Okay,
so
that makes
all of a sudden the math. Yeah, I mean our guys are they get, you know, around the office here they call them minis. Hey, this deal's a thin one. We're only making a mini on it. That's kind of the buzzword around here. But in general, they're making $1,000 a deal ish.
Okay, because the market I'm looking at and what I've heard before, if the average deal gross profit would be $7,500, then protected $7,500 leaves nothing left. So I would have to structure it in my overhead and still figure out a way for them to make a decent amount of money for their effort and to scale
up.
That's right,
and I mean, that's an astute observation, and you're exactly right, which is why in our business and the franchise that we built, Real Estate From Anywhere, which we have franchised, we do not only wholesale and real estate investment deal transactions, but our guys participate in add-on services. So they get their percentages of profits for not only the wholesale flip, but then they also get they get to share in the revenue on our construction services and our cost plus construction markup. So, you know, if we're doing a turnkey deal or if we're offering construction services on the back end to the buyer that bought from us, they're doubling their commission take if they can do a good job of selling our add-on services.
Okay. I understand your commission structure. You know, at this point in the game where we're at with it, those add-ons, we don't have those add-ons. And I've got to figure
how I can
get a sale to make three sales a month and put $3,000 in his pocket. That's bottom line.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and that's exactly why Mike doesn't teach the complicated level of what we do. But you're exactly right.
Okay, I understand it now. I go back to mine. You know, if we can net 55% to 60% on each deal, I'm happy.
Yep, I think that's great. I think that's perfect. Because you don't have any overhead. You're not running overhead. You're not offering health benefits and W-2 employment and, you know, that's exactly right. And as you grow and as you start to offer some of those other things, then you'll sit down and you'll reevaluate how do we make the compensation plan work for everybody.
Yeah. You want to pay them enough
cool.
to make them happy, not too much to go in competition.
That's exactly right. Yep, exactly. Anybody else?
Rob, I got a quick question. So I have some buyers. I'm going to blast this out. So what would you say? I'm going to say, hi, Tom here. Do you buy tenant-occupied Section 8 turnkey rentals? Just leave it like that? How would you phrase it?
Yeah, I would do, hi, Tom here. Let me ask you this. Where did you get the list that you have? Did you get the list from Section 8, or where did you get the list?
It's from what I've gotten from, I think it was from Facebook.
Gotcha.
Not a lot of buyers, but it's a start.
Sure. Gotcha. Yeah. I would shoot it out and I would do something like, hi, Tom here. Hey, I noticed, cause you don't know if they bought property cause you don't, it's not necessarily a public record list. I'd say, hi, Tom here. Hey, read what you said again, cause I probably would do just what you said. I might tweak a couple words. Read it again.
Yeah. Hi, Tom here, dash. Do you buy tenant-occupied Section 8 turnkey rentals?
Yeah, I think that's great. And then a call to action. I'm an active wholesaler. Call me for access to my inventory. Like do a call to action.
Okay.
To get them to pick up the phone.
I'm an active wholesaler. And then call me.
Yep.
For access to my inventory. Okay. All right. Okay. Should I mention anything about, 14 cap or any of that? Or just?
Well, I was just going to say, what I was just going to say is when you say, do you buy turnkey Section 8 rentals, you might put in there, 12 cap and above, or whatever the right cap rate is, 12 cap and above, so that they know, hey, this is a decent little cash flow deal.
Okay.
Yep. Yep, I would do that, and I'd fire that puppy out.
And I'll be doing that in a minute right now. Thanks.
Awesome.
All right, thanks a lot.
Yep, you got it. All right, guys. Well, hey, fun call, good call, great questions. I don't have anything to add here. I did a little brief conversation with Mike before he rolled out of town, and he gave me the scoop where everybody was at, and it was pretty consistent. So awesome. Thanks for being on here. Thanks for asking questions, and we'll see you guys on the next one.
Good to have you on the show, Rob.
Hey, you got it. Thanks. See you guys.
All right. Have a good
day.
Bye.